May it please the Court, I suggest that in this case, First Insurance Funding Corporation has been stung twice. First, it was stung by the Colson's firm in Florida, posing as intermediaries and wholly concocting phony, fraudulent premium finance transactions that involve no real insurance policies and no real business customers. In fact, setting up a fiction that they were intermediaries for the purposes of premium finance transactions. Now, to make matters worse, First Insurance Funding has been stung a second time by its own insurance company, who's adopted the fiction as the principal basis for its denial of coverage under the fidelity bond that it sold to First Insurance Funding's parent. But the well-pleaded allegations in the complaints that First Insurance Funding filed in the district court make crystal clear that in no circumstances in the fraudulent transactions at issue was the Colson's firm in truth acting as a finder or an intermediary or in any other way covered by Exclusion 3M, the principal provision upon which federal insurance company relies. Instead, it was acting wholly outside that, the scope of any authority it might have had in connection with its business relationship with First Insurance Funding.
Well, however, you did vest them with some authority, didn't you?
There was a business relationship. There was authority, as we pled in the amended complaint. Paragraph 18C makes that clear in an effort to clear up any misconception there might have been in the district court about the nature of the business relationship. And yes, there was authority granted to the Colson's firm to choose First Insurance Funding from among premium finance companies doing business in the Colson's market and to use the forms, the application forms for the premium finance loans, to use a software package and other materials for purposes of arranging legitimate premium finance transactions. That's
now,
true.
When that application reached your client's office, what happened? Did anyone affirmatively have to approve each transaction, or was there an account set up where this was a fairly automatic process? There's an intimation in your colleague's briefs that this was a fairly automatic process.
Yes, sir. The intimation in the Federal Insurance Company's brief is that there were blank checks that were given to the Colson's firm for the Colson's firm to indiscriminately write checks on the First Insurance Funding account. And from the investigation conducted before the denial of coverage, Federal Insurance Company knows that that's not how it worked. In fact, when the applications were submitted, and they were submitted by fax, as First Insurance Funding pled in the Florida suit against Colson's, there was a review of those applications to ensure that they complied with all the standards and practices First Insurance Funding has in place for approval of those loans. And then what happened is, if the application was approved, the loan was funded using a zero balance account that First Insurance had set up for that purpose. And while the Colson's firm did have checks to draw on that account, there wouldn't be any money in the account, and the checks would be dishonored if the application hadn't been approved, because when the application is approved, then the requisite amount of money is deposited to the account at that point, and only then can be withdrawn using the checks supplied to Colson's firm.
Were phony accounts approved?
Phony accounts were approved. And
so then money would go into the account.
That's right, and that was how Colson's perpetrated the fraud. In effect, posing as intermediaries, setting up a fiction.
On legitimate ones, and there were legitimate transactions.
Yes, there were.
How would you describe Colson's?
Colson's could be viewed in legitimate transactions as intermediaries.
Right.
That's true.
Okay, so what you're saying essentially is that when they did not act as an agent or intermediary for anyone, they didn't act as an intermediary for anyone when they did fraudulent activities, they were acting for themselves. That's how you make the distinction between the legitimate and illegitimate. When it was legitimate, they were an intermediary. When they did things for themselves, they weren't acting on your behalf.
They couldn't have been acting, that's correct, and they couldn't have been acting as an intermediary in connection with the fraudulent transactions, particularly when you look at the definition of intermediary that Federal Insurance Company advanced in the district court, which it derived from an Illinois appellate court decision named Ruskin versus Rogers, which defined intermediary, rather it was from a Black Law Dictionary definition in the case of intermediary, which was a party engaged to negotiate a matter between two parties. But here there wasn't a party on the other side of the transaction. There wasn't a business customer at all. And so there couldn't have been an intermediary It could not have been an intermediary with a business customer absent any true business customer and absent any true insurance policy.
So Federal's exclusion only applies to transactions where there's no exposure?
No.
I mean, I don't understand how there would be no need to insure something if it's legitimate. And one that's illegitimate, you're saying, well, that doesn't come under the exclusion. No,
our position doesn't depend, and this is what sets our position apart from this court's decision in Continental Corp versus Aetna Casualty and Surety. Our position doesn't depend on a distinction, for purposes of applying the exclusion, on a distinction between honest transactions and dishonest transactions. We don't contend, because it's true, as this court said in the Continental case, it's true that an exclusion must have meaning. It must take away coverage that the bond grants in the first instance. And so you can't, in this court's, it's untenable, in this court's words, to relegate an exclusion to a mere limitation on non-existent coverage. So we understand that the exclusion can't be reduced to mere surplusage, and so it can't be reduced to a provision that applies only to honest transactions, because the bond doesn't grant coverage for honest transactions in the first instance. Instead, what we say is that the exclusion must be applied as it's written, and the exclusion as written requires that the loss be caused by an agent, broker, finder, intermediary, or other representative of the same general character of the assured. And so what that means is not necessarily an honest transaction, but actual service as an intermediary, actual service as a finder. And the way Federal Insurance Company has defined it, that requires a party on the other side of the transaction. That requires a business customer. So Federal Insurance Company has argued that there could be no fraudulent transactions in the course of actual service as an intermediary. There's no support for that proposition, mind you. There's no factual support, no legal support. But we contend that that's the way the exclusion must be read. We don't require that the exclusion be read to include words that aren't there, honest transactions. And so that's what we say sets this case apart from Continental Corp versus Aetna. Now, there's no dispute in this case that First Insurance Funding was defrauded, and there couldn't be any dispute about that given the case's present procedural posture, given the procedural vehicle that Federal Insurance Company chose to challenge the complaint. Can't be any dispute about that. Nor can there be any dispute about the fact that the Colson's firm was not acting as intermediaries. There can't be, and that's not a mere conclusion that the district court was entitled to disregard or reject. That's a well-pleaded allegation based on the fact that there, in the fraudulent transactions at issue, purported transactions, there weren't any actual loans. There weren't any actual insurance policies. There weren't any actual business customers. Although in certain instances there was use of the name of a prior business customer. But even in those circumstances, there wasn't an actual business customer as we see it, because there wasn't an actual transaction set up with that named customer. Instead, there was a phony transaction, a completely fictitious transaction. And so there couldn't have been service, according to the well-pleaded allegations, there couldn't have been service as a finder or intermediary, and therefore the loss is completely taken outside of exclusion 3M. Now, it simply doesn't matter, and in fact it's irrelevant for these purposes, that in legitimate transactions, Colson's might be viewed as acting as an intermediary. But instead of accepting the allegations as true, as the district court was required to do, and draw all inferences in favor of the non-moving party, First Insurance Funding, district court rejected those allegations, or decided that they were incredible. And in doing so, it really did so based on two misconceptions. First, that First Insurance Funding had made either in these proceedings in district court, or in the case against Colson's in Florida court, a fatal admission that First Insurance Funding had an agency or brokerage relationship with Colson's, and therefore pled itself into exclusion 3M and right out of court. And the second misconception by the district court is that First Insurance Funding, the position that we advance, requires reading into the exclusion something that really isn't there. In the words of the district court, reading into the exclusion a caveat that the finder or intermediary must in fact be acting for the insured. Now, those are both misconceptions because there's been no fatal admission at all. There's been consistent pleading both in the district court and in the federal court concerning the actual authority, and indeed there was actual authority for legitimate transactions granted to Coulson's, but Coulson's has never acted, and insurance brokerage firms never act for First Insurance Funding and premium finance companies like First Insurance Funding as agents or brokers of the premium finance company. We consistently pled in district court in both iterations of the complaint here, and there's no inconsistent allegation in Florida at all, that the sole agency or broker relationship is with the business customer. Because what the agent or broker does in that instance where there's a real transaction is procure insurance for that business customer. And again, in a legitimate transaction, what happens next is that the agent or broker then chooses a premium finance company, if the business customer desires it, to arrange legitimate premium financing. Second, as I've mentioned, there's no reason to think that First Insurance Funding's position depends on reading something into the exclusion that isn't there. As I said, the position doesn't depend on requiring that the exclusion apply only to honest transactions. Instead, we ask only that the exclusion be applied as it's written, to apply only to losses caused by an actual agent, an actual broker, an actual intermediary. So when the district court says that we've attempted to add to the exclusion the caveat that the finder or intermediary must in fact be acting for the insured, that's not at all what we seek to do. And in fact, that formulation assumes that Coulson's, the thief in this instance, was acting as a finder or intermediary, assumes away our position entirely.
What kind of a transaction or activity would be, you say the exclusion doesn't apply, that would be covered by, I guess, the insurance? Obviously, one where there's no business customer would not be. Where there is a business customer, would there still be something that would not be excluded? I don't know what kind of activity it would take, but some kind of infidelity.
Certainly, any kind of dishonesty or theft by a third party would be included under the insuring agreements, all but the first, which applies to employee dishonesty. And what federal insurance company's position would mean, if accepted, is that an intermediary, if a third party, like Coulson's, had acted in any way, at any time, as an intermediary, then anything that it did, any dishonesty, any fraud it perpetrated, any theft, would never be covered, even if it had nothing to do with premium finance transactions, fraudulent or otherwise. For example, Coulson's personnel could drive to Northbrook to the offices of First Insurance Funding and break into the safe and steal money. And under the federal insurance company theory, that would be excluded under exclusion 3M because Coulson's had at one time in the past engaged in transactions that could be viewed as intermediary transactions. Now, unless the court has additional questions of me, I'll reserve the balance of my time.
Thank you, Mr. Dickinson. We'll hear now from Mr. Kay.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Edward Kay, representing the defendant appellee, Federal Insurance Company. Your Honors, we've heard today that there was a business relationship between Collison's and First Insurance Funding. And it's our position that First cannot state a claim for relief in their complaint based upon our bond arising from the frauds committed by Collison's because of exclusion 3M, which exempts from the bond's coverage losses caused by intermediaries or finders or other representatives of the same character. In this case, Collison's was such an intermediary or finder or representative of the same general character and committed dishonesty vis-a-vis First Insurance. I think it's important to note up front some rules of insurance construction. A court cannot create ambiguity where none exists. A party's subjective expectations that it was owed coverage cannot create any ambiguity. If the terms of the contract are plain, the parties are bound by the deal they made. In this case, Federal's bond issued to First's parent corporation, Wintrust Financial Corporation, undertook to guarantee the fidelity of the employees working for Wintrust and Wintrust's subsidiaries, including First. But that bond did not undertake to guarantee the fidelity or honesty of everyone who might have contact with First. Specifically, through Exclusion 3M, the parties agreed that Federal was not undertaking any obligation to guarantee the fidelity, honesty, of any agent, broker, factor, commission merchant, independent contractor, intermediary, finder, or other representative of the same general character of the insured.
He says that there's no intermediary or finder if there is not what he refers to as a business customer, since they were self-serving with their fraud as opposed to having a legitimate business customer.
Well,
it divides the Collisons in half.
I think you have to look at the purpose of the exclusion, which in, we discussed the First Circuit's decision in Stop and Shop, where the First Circuit noted that the purpose of such an exclusion is to place on the insured, not the carrier, but the insured, the risk of picking a faithless agent, or in this case, a faithless finder or intermediary, which is the purpose, which is why you would buy additional coverage to guarantee that when you give Collisons the blank checks, when you authorize Collisons, as they said in their complaint against Collisons, a verified complaint, verified by the president and chief executive officer of First, it gave blank checks and drafts to Collisons. It authorized Collisons to sign those blank checks and drafts. When you do that with an entity, you want to purchase additional coverage to guarantee the fidelity of that entity, to guarantee the honesty of that entity.
So that entity could only use those checks if the particular application was approved. Is that right?
That's true, but I mean, in the context of the in the context of this of their fraud, what you were doing is you were giving the entity the wherewithal to perpetrate frauds against you without purchasing fidelity insurance to guarantee their honesty, and so that in the event that that entity were to commit frauds against you, you would have insurance coverage for those losses. But in this case, what we have is an exclusion that says loss caused by an intermediary or finder or representative of the same general character is excluded. It doesn't say loss is caused only when the intermediary or finder is actually acting for the benefit of the insured. A similar argument was made to the First Circuit in the Stop and Shop case, where the insured argued that under what was then called, in that case, called the authorized representative exclusion, that while the authorized representative, Hamilton, was the authorized representative, the employees of Hamilton, who actually absconded with the funds, could not be considered part of Hamilton because they were acting for their own benefit and not Hamilton. And the First Circuit rejected that. They said that's going to render the exclusion meaningless. It plainly states that the exclusion applies whenever there's a loss caused by the authorized representative. Here, the exclusion plainly states losses caused by an intermediary or finder or other representative of the same general character are excluded. There are no ifs, ands, or buts about it. The exclusion is plain, unambiguous, and must be enforced as written. Let me just briefly address the other claim, part of the same argument, that Collisons was not an intermediary, and the court had no right to look beyond the complaint. We attached in our motion to dismiss the verified complaint Collisons filed against, that First filed against Collisons. And, you know, in that complaint, First alleged it authorized Collisons. First alleged it gave Collisons the blank checks. Today we have an admission, I believe, that there was a business relationship between them. If you have a business relationship, you could have purchased additional coverage to guarantee that entity. You have employee coverage. Exclusion 3M excludes losses caused by the infidelity of intermediaries or finders such as Collison's. And based upon that exclusion, the trial judge correctly found that First had not stated a claim for relief under its complaint. Your Honor, do you have any questions? We have stated additional arguments in our brief regarding the insuring clauses. I would stand on those arguments in my brief unless Your Honors have additional questions.
Thank you, Mr. Kaye.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Dickinson has 2 minutes.
Your Honors, again, we seek only to have the exclusion applied as it's written. We don't seek to have terms that aren't there added. We don't seek to have it interpreted in any way other than in the terms that Federal itself chose for its standard form bond. And what that means is that the exclusion applies only in circumstances where the third party is in fact an agent or broker or intermediary or finder. And the well-pleaded allegations establish exactly the contrary with respect to the fraudulent transactions causing the loss here. The First Circuit's decision in Stop and Shop versus Federal Insurance Company, there the insured relied on a completely different and irrelevant argument, and that is that the authorized representative exclusion didn't apply there, not because the insured contended that there wasn't an authorized representative relationship with the tax processing firm Hamilton Taft, but because the employees, the insured argued, the employees of the authorized representative, and in fact the insured admitted, conceded, that the firm itself, the tax processing firm Hamilton Taft itself, was an authorized representative, but argued that the employees of Hamilton Taft who perpetrated the fraud did so in a way that didn't benefit Hamilton Taft itself. And so the employees who perpetrated the fraud weren't authorized representatives and therefore not covered by the exclusion. And that's not at all what we're saying. We're drawing no distinction between the Colson's firm and the Colson's firm employees who were directly involved in perpetrating the fraud. We say that none of those entities acted in this case as an intermediary and that therefore exclusion 3M can't apply. We ask that the court reverse the judgment of the district court and send the case back for further proceedings.
Our thanks to both Mr. Dickinson and Mr. Kaye for their fine presentations this morning. And the case is